It's Tuesday and time to read from your comments. Yesterday, we spoke with Rutgers professor Nancy DiTommaso about her argument that favoritism drives minority unemployment. We asked listeners to tell us how they got their jobs, and Charles Spiegel from San Francisco responded. Charles has a daughter through an open adoption, and he writes, "I ended up hiring her brother into my small law office so that he, from a working-class Hispanic family where high school diplomas are rare, could benefit from the world I live in, which happens to be Jewish, white, and at least college degrees expected, if not graduate degrees. Giving a young Hispanic teen his first resume job taught me more about race and class division in our society. I'm sorry that more people are not exposed to bridging these profound cultural divides." Lenny Anderson had a different story. "I'm an African-American male with a graduate degree," he wrote. "I've been working at one of the major universities in Ohio for about a year now, but I found my job by pounding the pavement. I'm a member of different professional associations in my career field, thinking that would help me get a job, but it didn't. What I found, even with a graduate degree, membership in professional associations honestly did not pay off. Being an African-American was a barrier for many of the positions I applied for. I feel I got my present job because of serendipity." The exceptional response of medical professionals in emergency rooms around Boston prompted a discussion about the crises ERs are prepared to handle. Cindy Lee wrote in, "I work in a small emergency department in Galax, Virginia. I-77 is one of our big problem areas. We're relatively close to where a recent 95-car pileup was. Just prior to that incident, our hospital had a mock mass casualty drill, and during the actual mass incident, our hospital performed very well. An ED is an ED no matter how big it is. We take care of what comes through the door. Our job as a smaller facility is to stabilize and transfer to a more appropriate facility." During a conversation on the endangered art of sign painters, Ellen Murphy from Mission Hills, Kansas, wrote in with an appreciation. "My dad is 85 now," she wrote, "but all his life he's been an illustrator. When we were kids, he made big sale signs for the windows of the local Five and Dime, painting in big red letters on butcher block paper on the dining room table, and then calling a couple of us in to carry carefully and lay it down to dry somewhere flat. He has 7 daughters, and no doubt he filled countless economic cracks with those jobs, which he did at night, after working as the only sign painter ever hired by American Airlines. He took many sign painting jobs, and they were almost all lifesavers. We still talk about going with him to pick up checks from various shops." And finally, a correction. Last week, during our conversation about Jason Collins, we assigned sports writer Marcus Hayes to the wrong paper. His column actually appears in the Philadelphia Daily News. If you have a correction, comment, or a question for us, the best way to reach us is by email. The address, talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name. If you're on Twitter, you can follow us there at TOTN. Talk of the Nation is produced by Jessica Reedy, Natalie Winston, Tinbeat Ermias, A.D. Quigg, and Priska Neely. Priska also handles our web content. Our editor is Sarah Handel. Gwen Uten is our director. Melissa Marquis is our technical director. She gets engineering help from Greg Gavin, Cal Southworth, Bud Aiello, Dennis Burns, and Andrew Watts. Talk of the Nation's theme music was composed by Greg Smith. The executive producer, Sue Goodwin. I'm Neil Conan. This is NPR News.